passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times, where we're going to change the world one ohm at a time. Here on the first Thursday of the month, like every first Thursday, we're going to be putting things through a spiritual lens. We being none other than Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. And who joins me after he just finished his drive time show, which is Monday through Friday, out of Manchester, New Hampshire. And I'm sure that he'll come post how you can listen to it live or in replay. Matt, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Yes, how was your show today?
It was excellent, although apparently there was a big story unfolding while I was on the air that I didn't realize. But
I just heard a little bit about that. I'm not finding anything. I was actually trying to look at it. I don't know if it's the same story that got thrown at me as tossed to me when I called in, I should say, which was McMaster story.
Yes, that is the same. Yeah, Chris mentioned it to me. I didn't realize this was happening. McMaster on his way out. Another one bites the dust.
After Hicks, was it? Yeah, Hicks is the most recent one.
Yes.
So do you have any information on it?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. It says NBC News is reporting that he's going to be out as early as next month. Looks like this was a move orchestrated by Chief of Staff John Kelly and Defense Secretary James Mattis. The move would be the latest in a long line of shakeups. Yeah, we know that. And then it says a leading candidate to become Trump's now third national security advisor is the auto industry executive Stephen Biegun, B-I-E-G-U-N, according to the officials. I'm just going to call him Biegun, who currently serves as VP of International Government Affairs for Ford Motor Company, is no stranger to the White House. He served on the National Security Council staff from 01 to 03, including as a senior staffer for then security advisor Condoleezza Rice. So, wow.
Well, it sounds like he has at least some passing experience. Though
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, I don't know. You're more likely to know this than I am. Does he have to be approved, or is that something that Trump can just appoint without having to get it cleared through anybody?
National Security Advisor, I believe he just has to appoint him.
Okay.
Like Secretary of State and positions like that, there has to be they have to be confirmed. But National Security Advisor, I think, because that's a relatively new position, right? I think that was created under George W. Bush, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think it required Senate confirmation.
You know, a national security advisor, I think, has actually been around for a while.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm not sure. Anyways, the news is unbreaking, right? Is breaking right here live on the Dr. Kevin Show. Speaking of live, we are live. If you are listening to us and it's Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can be part of the conversation. Call in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057, or you can go to facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N. Like my page, because I'm a likable guy. Ask Matt, lie for me. See at the very top, posted at the top, is today's show with Matt, and you can comment there, and I will see that comment, and we will bring it on air.
You're right, by the way. So, the position itself goes back to 1953. Robert Cutler was Eisenhower's national security advisor. So I'm not sure what I was thinking of, but he does not have to be confirmed by the Senate. He can just be appointed.
Okay. Well, interesting.
I wonder why that is. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Maybe Trump will put somebody in that knows what they're doing, or maybe he won't. I don't know. I don't know enough about this guy. I can't comment on it. I mean, some of his picks have definitely been questionable in the past, type of things. But anyways, so that's the unfolding news. You said that you had a good show, even though the news unfolded just as you were going off air.
Yes. Well, the thing is, though, in this era, there's always plenty of news to talk about regardless. So it's a very easy show to do.
Yes, it is. For tonight's show, as usual, I'm trying to turn over a new leaf and stay with a more positive thing. So I've got a positive story that I researched and found online that's currently happening somewhere in the world that I'm going to share in each segment for us to talk about as we talk about other things as well.
Excellent.
I am going to say, I don't know if our mutual friend, Mr. Hopwood, told you that I'm going to be on his show on this upcoming Tuesday night to talk about Tarot.
He did mention that, yeah. So I was going to ask you, does that mean are you going to get here early and join me on my program as well?
I'm going to come early, and I'm going to come play with the Matster.
Excellent.
Yeah. I'm going to try to be there at the very beginning of the show, but I don't know. I might not get there until a little bit after. I've got some stuff going on, and it all happened kind of, sort of, quickly. So I'm going to do my best to be there at the beginning, because I like to be there the whole 2 hours.
Yes.
And kind of put things there. So I will be seeing you on Tuesday. How about that?
Outstanding.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Well, I was outstanding today because the weather was beautiful out, but they're saying that we're going to get a cyclone storm. It's a cyclone bomb, like we got at the end of January. That's what they're saying. And they're saying that we can, depending on where you are, you can expect 4 to 6 inches of freezing rain or heavy wet snow tomorrow. And the tides are going to be high, and there's going to be a lot of flooding from the Mid-Atlantic to New England.
Oh, my. Yeah, once we get into March, it doesn't bother me. In my mind, March 1st is the first day of spring. Because even if there's bad weather, any day now it's going to warm up and all melt away. And actually, right now, where I am in Manchester, it has melted away. There's no snow on the ground at all. So hopefully we just get rain here.
Well, they are saying that we're going to get snow on Wednesday, at least in Nashua and in Portland and in Portsmouth. I don't have Manchester on my weather program, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's snow in Nashua, Portsmouth, and Portland, that there's probably going to be snow in Manchester. I don't know how much.
Yeah.
Not sure how much. I just know that every place is reporting snow on Wednesday. But, it's going to be up in the mid to high 40s before, during, and after. So, those things don't usually accumulate or last for long.
Right.
So now, any news or things that you are interested in bringing up? Before I put out my first positive story for the day.
Well, we already talked about H.R. McMaster, so why don't we? I'm curious about your first positive story.
Okay. Well, my first positive story is actually a New Hampshire story.
Okay.
Couple who loves the outdoors donates 204 acres of forest land in Groton, New Hampshire. And they, a couple who hike, hunt, and cross-country ski in New Hampshire forest has bought 204-acre parcel nearby and donated to the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forest. Somebody named Pam and John McPherson, they bought a cabin in 1992 in Groton near the Forest Society's Cockermouth Forest. Not been there. When land came up for sale recently, they decided to act on it. They said because they've enjoyed trails to the top of Bald Knob and Crosby Markham for decades, that those memories and family love of outdoors prompted them to act when the land became available to assure it was not developed. The land is densely forested, hilly, and with small streams running into Punch Brook and Cockermouth River. So, you know, I don't think that this couple, they bought a cabin in 1992 in Groton. I don't know if that's where their actual home residence is, but I think good for them. You like the outdoors. You really want to help the environment. You want to preserve it. They're putting their money where their mouth are. I'm sure 204 acres was not cheap.
Right.
Are you familiar? Yeah. Are you even familiar with the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forest? Have you heard of that place before?
No, I'm not familiar with it. Although, to be honest with you, I'm probably about the least outdoorsy human being you'll ever meet. So, if anyone's not going to be familiar with it, it's me.
Okay. I like to go outdoors. I enjoy hiking. I can't say that I am, I've been there. I don't believe I have. But anyways, I just wanted to report that. I thought that was a piece of good news. I thought it was kind of nice. And it's nice to, you know, to know that another couple of hundred acres, I'm not even sure where, I have to say, I'm not even sure where Groton is.
I know it's up north. That's about all I know.
Okay.
It's in the north country.
Well, found a beautiful picture of it, all in fall, of course, because that's when you find the most stunning pictures, especially aerial up in that part of the world when you see the thing. But, yeah, so I just wanted to share that. I thought it was a nice little story and that it would be a good way to start. You know, a lot of people, and we're probably going to be going to break any minute now, but a lot of people are saying that more and more people are coming up as the government's becoming more tight-fisted and cutting things like arts programs and environmental programs. And there seems to be a war on the last decade of where we have been, that more people are coming up and doing more things. Are you finding that true?
In what way? Like doing more things in what way? I'm not sure exactly.
Donating more money, doing more things. More involved. I mean, people are clearly getting more involved. We have the highest rate of females in elections ever this election cycle.
Right, right. Well, that, you know, it's interesting you say that because that's one of the positive things that people who don't tend to see much positive in the Trump presidency, one of the few things I'll often point out that I hear people point out is at least it's energized the opposition and it's caused people to take an interest and to get involved who might not otherwise have done so. So that's a positive thing. So Yeah, so I think you're right, and it has caused people to get involved. It has caused more females to run for office. I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of I think that we're seeing that this is actually bringing people together and making them a little less apathetic. We finally found something to shake some of the people out of their apathy. And Trump shook a bunch of people out of their apathy too. They might have been people that I wish had been left there, but he still did it.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
So I want to ask you this question. It's a lead into the next story. Again, I expect any minute now we're going to hear music, so I'm not going to go into it in depth. But I am curious. Have you heard of the Innocence Project?
Absolutely. I happen to be a big fan of the Innocence Project.
Okay. So we've got a story coming up about the Innocence Project that I was going to share with you. One, if you follow them, you may be aware of if you follow them. Do they have anything around this area? Do they have any like offices around this area or anything?
Not that I'm aware of. But I can tell you this. Mike Farrell, he played BJ Honeycutt on MASH.
Yep.
So he's done some work with the Innocence Project, and I went to go be on a show, on a television show in Nashua. This was maybe a year ago. A gentleman named Ken Gidge does a show there, and Mike Farrell was there on the previous program promoting the Innocence Project, and I ran into him there.
Mm. Boy, would I have loved to get him on my show. We'll be right back here at the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Tune in to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more. All to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Mother, Mother Ocean.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Buffett. West Indian manatees are one of the most unique animals on Earth, and we're still finding out so many new things about them. But manatees are endangered, and many of them are killed or injured each year because of watercraft collisions or other human activities. You can help save these gentle marine mammals. For free tips on what you can do, call Save the Manatee Club at 1-800-432-JOIN. Thank you.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times, where we're changing the world one om at a time. Today is our Through the Spiritual Lens, where I have on the very first Thursday of every month, Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. In the afternoon, his drive time show can be found in Manchester, New Hampshire, or on the internet. And at some point, he will go on to the Dr. Kevin Facebook fan page and put the link onto tonight's show. So if you should want to hear his show or participate, there's actually a big 95.3. And he's also got a call-in show from 4 to 6. Speaking of which, we are a call-in show. So you can either go to facebook.com/mydrkevin and post your comment or question right there underneath where we are. Or you can call in at 202-570-7057. Again, that's 202-570-7057. This is a surprise. I just saw it this morning. A Massachusetts man who works at Catholic Charities Child Care Center was arrested for allegedly sending white powder in an envelope to Donald Trump Jr., part of a series of hoax missives sent to prominent people across the country. He was arrested this morning after investigators tracked him down through a company that sells a $10 prank known as Glitter Bomb, a cardboard mailing tool that spills glitter everywhere when opened, according to a criminal complaint. Frillo was identified as a suspect when investigators combing Twitter noticed that a glitter bomb was mailed to one of the white powder letter recipients. The company that sent it, shipyourenemiesglitter.com, told investigators Frillo placed the order and tried to send glitter bombs to the members of President Donald Trump's family. But the company refused to fill the orders because all the names were all associated with President Trump. I don't know. Is he above getting a glitter bomb? It might look very dashing. The sparkles could be seen in between the gaps of his hair on his head. Trump Jr.'s wife, Vanessa, opened one of the powder envelopes last month at a New York apartment belonging to her mother and was rushed to a hospital as a precaution. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of that company before. I remember hearing about that for the first time a couple of years ago, and I thought that was a pretty funny idea. But I also, when I think of white powder in an envelope, I think of after 9/11 when it was what was it called? Was it anthrax?
Anthrax. It was in, yep.
Yeah. So I can understand the concern, you know, somebody receives white powder. I wonder how the glitter bomb works. Like, if it's glittery, then I guess I wouldn't think it was anthrax. I would think it was a glitter bomb. But I guess not everyone's hip to the glitter bomb concept, which I think is a great concept.
Well, it's very interesting. But, I don't know. Maybe if we made it available to send President Trump glitter bombs, maybe we could get the post office back in the black. Think of how many people would be, you know, sending one.
That's right.
Hey, it's a way to raise money. Anyways, that was not one of my stories that popped up while we were on break. And I was just like, oh, well, that's fun. I'm going to share that. So the Innocent Project. For those of you who don't know, the Innocent Project is a nonprofit legal organization dedicated to exonerating wrongly convicted people and reforming the criminal justice system since 1992. Join Alexander's fight for freedom. So they joined this guy, and he walked free after he got absolved of the crime thanks to DNA evidence. He, in 1980, was 21-year-old sentenced to life imprisonment for rape. He said he was innocent then, and he has maintained his innocence. Of course, you know, he walked free from the Louisiana State Penitentiary. They didn't believe a 21-year-old black man in Louisiana and convicted him, probably with a lack of evidence, because that evidence got overturned. Isn't that amazing? I'm shocked. Such a liberal state. But he didn't leave prison alone. A day after he was freed, he reunited with the dog that he raised behind bars, a 9-month-old pup whose name is Innocent, or In for short. I named her In because I was innocent and she was innocent. In was born April 22nd, 2016. I wrote the date on my heart. I can remember her birthday better than I can remember my own. And this one was the runt of the litter. So he's leaving now. 30 years. What are his What is my question is, I think this is a great story, and I love this Innocent Project. My question is, what supports do they have in place for somebody who, since for 30 years, on how to deal in today's world, living not incarcerated? I mean, I don't know, but are there programs available? Because you can't take somebody who's been incarcerated for 30 years that had probably not a whole lot of great life skills because he was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, well, I think that's why some people, I think, end up back in prison.
Yes.
Because, you know, you obviously, ideally, you would think anyone who's in prison would want to get out. But there are some people who are in prison for so long that they don't know how to function on the outside, and they become overwhelmed, and then they maybe do something to intentionally get themselves sent back. I know that with private prisons, they're not really given any support on their way out the door, because the private prison industry wants people to come back, you know, because they want to keep those beds filled and those cells filled. So they generally have a higher recidivism rate, because they don't want to teach you any skills to survive on the outside. They want you to have to come back through the system, so they can continue to profit from each individual. So that's, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm sure it's different everywhere. I'm sure there's probably prisons in some places that do a great job of preparing people for life on the outside as they're on their way out. I don't know. I don't really know much about how that works, but it is a real issue, because some people end up going back, and it's because that's as strange as it may sound, that's where some people would prefer to be, because if that's, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if this gentleman, after 30 years, I mean, it's had to be an incredible adjustment to be on the outside again. Plus, too, you know, once you've been convicted of something, you know, even if you're ultimately exonerated, try getting a job. You know, any employer is going to, not any employer, but a lot of employers are going to, you know, even if you explain to them the whole thing, or maybe they even saw it on the news, they're not necessarily going to trust you right away once you've been incarcerated, even if you were exonerated for it. So I'm sure it's enormously difficult.
Well, they say here that he learned carpentry, woodworking, and jewelry making skills in prison. He's now trying to raise the funds to help him open a booth in the Frenchman's Art Market Art Garage in New Orleans. He said he wants to work and to provide for himself. There's a crowdfunding campaign to help him get started. His son was 2 when he went to prison, and he is now 40 years old. So it's his 38 years of wrongful prison. 38 years. Sorry, I think I misspoke that.
Wow.
And this really gets to me. Under Louisiana's compensation law, Malcolm Alexander could receive only $250,000 plus funding for job training and education for his 38 years of wrongful imprisonment. And the state could oppose his compensation application, which often happens even in the face of factual innocence. So this amount is not even guaranteed. It could take years for his claim to come through. So they stuck him in prison, wrongfully so, for 38 years, and the state is going to fight about doing anything to help him adjust.
Wow.
What's wrong with that picture, Matt?
Yeah, in some, I know that in some instances, people who've been exonerated, they sue the state for, you know, they end up getting millions of dollars. This guy only gets, what did you say it was, $200,000?
$250,000 is the maximum he could get.
But it's the maximum, yeah.
It says that often happens, even in the face of factual innocence, that the state could oppose his compensation. We don't know that it will. We don't know. He's saying, you know, he's got a son now who has a son who's 20, you know, and he missed so much of raising his son and missing a lot of his grandson's life. But it looks like they stayed in touch with him because he's living with them, with this big, beautiful black dog. I'm looking at the picture. But he has got a GoFundMe. He is trying to get a place to sell his stuff and the things that he learned to do while he was in prison, his woodwork, his carpentry, his woodworking, and his jewelry. And I have posted the link, which I found on the Today Show site. I have posted the link on My Dr. Kevin, facebook.com/MyDrKevin. If you're interested in reading this article, please go and read it. Read it, like it. And if you're looking at some kind of worthwhile GoFundMe project, this could very well be it. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah. There's a lot of cases like this, that's for sure. It's people don't realize how many people are sent to prison. And in Louisiana, too. I mean, not to pick on them specifically, but they are known for being corrupt. I had read about one story a few years ago from Louisiana where someone had been – oh, here's the story. I see it now. Someone had been sent to prison for murder who had confessed to the murder, but only after the police and the prosecutor got him drunk. So they actually got the guy drunk, and then he confessed to this murder. And based on that confession, he was sent to prison. It's incredible the things that go on.
Yeah. So speaking of other good news, when senior couple receives citation over trash-filled yard, teens step in to help. This is Rochester, New York. This couple have lived in the same house for 50 years, so you know they're at least in their 70s, if not 80s, right? And for the first time ever, they received a citation from the city concerning piles of trash littering their yard. However, it's not theirs. When the wind picks up, garbage from a nearby shopping center is blown into their yard. So the city gives a citation to a couple of 80-year-olds for trash that's not even theirs. Upon hearing about that, the couple received a citation of literature. The students on the cross-country team from McQuaid Jesuit High School stopped by the seniors' house in Greece, New York on Saturday, picked up all the trash. They installed a fence to prevent any more littering from being blown on the lawn. And the parents worked together with, they worked with their parents and together with city officials to require the shopping center trash to install locks on their dumpsters. They say here in Rochester First, it wasn't just us. People were stopping. A woman and a couple little girls stopped, helped with trash cleanup, and a man came over and helped with the fencing. That's what we call the community coming together. What do you think?
That's Rochester, New York?
Yep. Yeah. Rochester, New York area. It was actually in Greece, New York. So, but it said Rochester first, so I'm suspecting that it's in the Rochester area.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, one of the reasons I like this story is, of course, if you... You know, there's all those kids down in the Parkland, Florida, that seem to be making a big big shakeup. The shooting, the kids.
Oh yeah.
Do you think? Are we? Is it always been this way, and do we not report it, or are we getting a generation of more activist kids willing to do stuff? What do you think?
Well, I think this is a really unique moment. These kids are definitely having an impact because I've been talking about this a lot on my show, and it's funny. I'm usually the cynic in the room, but I've been a little bit optimistic that and everyone else who comes on my show tells me I'm wrong. But I think this is a very unique moment. You've got a lot of Republicans now, including the president, by the way, who are willing to varying degrees, actually take on the NRA. And really try to do something about guns. And I don't recall seeing anything quite like this since at least the 90s when we had the assault weapons ban, where you had Republicans willing to take on the NRA, willing to take their – some of them willing to take that risk with their base. And Trump has been really surprising me, exhibiting some actual, dare I say, leadership qualities. and really kind of telling people, you know, we need to quit being afraid of the NRA and fight for what we think is right. I've been surprised. But I think a lot of it has to do with what you pointed out. It's these kids. They are making a difference, absolutely. And I think this may be a turning point on the issue. And this may be the beginning of a new generation of, you know, kids, teenagers, young people getting active, you know, because their voices are being heard, clearly. It's having an effect.
Well, and, you know, they're trying to bury it. The bureaucracy is trying to bury it. They're trying to say, well, you know, it's losing steam and, you know, and we're going to, you know, and Congress is getting tied up in other things and we're hearing all this stuff. But I don't think these kids are going to give up that easily. And I kind of, I'm kind of hoping that somebody can coordinate the effort of all of these, from Sandy Hook and Parkland over to Colorado, any of these places that have had mass shootings, and especially the shootings in the elementary schools. And Sandy Hook was long enough now ago that those kids are in middle school, headed to high school by now, those survivors. But
yeah.
I think there should be a rallying point. I think there's, you know, I'd like to see one political activist group that grows out of tying all of these survivors together so they can't be ignored, because they do, it gets ignored. And your cynical self and my cynical self says, what's going to stop this one from getting ignored? But I think it's different. I agree with you. And we'll be right back for the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing and a summer evening. It's everybody over for Sunday dinner and your family sleeping in their own beds at night. Making home affordable is a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is Why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on the first Thursday of the month, where we're trying to put some things through the spiritual lens. I'm here with none other than Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. Go, Matt, go. Who you can hear from 4 to 6 Monday through Friday on his Drive Time show through Manchester 95.3, which is also available online. You can get all that information on facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N. right at the top of it. You can also comment to be part of the show, or you can call in because this is a live call-in show, and you can call in at 202-570-7057. So, are you tired of good news yet, or should I keep going there, Matt?
No, keep going. Good news is good.
So, this is a story. You know, they had the teachers that went on strike in West Virginia. And they did strike a deal with state legislatures. They'll be returning to schools. They hadn't had a pay raise for quite a while, and their benefits were really bad. And, of course, you know, one of my pet peeves is how poorly we treat teachers and then get all up in their face when we don't do well on scores or we don't do well on, you know, in our world standing, we're not too impressive. But these teachers, before they went on strike, they had a lot of students that depended on free lunches.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually got together and they made boxes up ahead of time. They would take time off from the picket line to feed their hungry students. Since many state students rely on free or reduced price school lunches for food, the educators packed hundreds of lunches for their low-income pupils. They passed some out at distribution point with help with local nonprofits and church groups. Some diligent teachers went door to door with boxes of food. They said, our students rely on us for more than just education, so we're trying to help them during this time, said teacher Kevin Green. That just really, you know, because there are some people that want to paint the teachers as bad for going on strike and, you know, and the kids, you know, how can you do that to the kids and the education? But, you know, the thing is, teachers, social services, people that are out there really doing the tough work a lot of the times with either children or people that can't take care of themselves, the elderly, the mentally and emotionally challenged, they're the ones that get the screw job, because people that are drawn to that are the people who do it because it's a calling, it's a mission, it's part of their heart. And they get taken advantage of. And we pay $50 million to somebody who can dribble a ball and think that that's okay, but not give a $5,000 a year raise to a teacher who probably is not far above the poverty level, but is responsible for our next generation of thinkers.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Really. So had you heard about this?
No, I hadn't heard that story specifically. Yeah, but I think, you know, I mean, teachers have a right to strike. You know, they're part of a union for a reason. It depends somewhat. I do think, though, there is this perception out there that some people have that teachers generally across the board are paid poorly. And, you know, it's not true everywhere. There are some places where teachers are actually paid very well, but there are also a lot of horror stories of cases where teachers are paid poorly and are given so little to work with in terms of materials. I mean, we've all heard stories of teachers who, for example, out of their own pocket have to buy supplies for the classrooms because, regardless of how well or how not well they're paid, they're not, budgeted any money for supplies for the classroom. No teacher should have to do that. No educator should have to go out and spend their own money on materials that they need to teach a class. That's kind of ridiculous. So there's a lot wrong there, you know, depending on where you are. But, but teachers, they have a right to go on strike, certainly. And I'm not one to demonize, you know, some people like to demonize the NEA and any kind of teacher unions or any public unions, but you know, we have unions for a reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have my problems with the educational system. We both know that.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about them ad nauseum. But one of the things that I can say is that, you know, the countries with the highest scores for students and the highest, you know, like all the things that they measure education systems in the world, I mean, some of those countries are paying their teachers six figures. Those teachers get paid like doctors and lawyers. They're such a respected profession. And I really think that, you know, we've got some inherent issues here. And I've had my problems with the NEA before, as far as I think they contribute to some of the problems when they protect bad teachers. Mm-hmm. I think that there should be a certain standard in the union. You know, I mean, the whole idea of, you know, that just because they've been there tenure drives me crazy. You know, but this led me on to another interesting thing, which is a little sad. New Mexico to pass first law prohibiting lunch shaming. Do you know what lunch shaming is?
No, I'm dying to find out.
Lunch shaming is considered the practice of shaming or humiliating school children who are behind on their meal fees. Examples of this practice have surfaced around the country. One boy in Alabama was reportedly sent home with a stamp on his arm reading, "I need lunch money." Lunch ladies have been forced to throw out students' hot meals because they didn't have enough funds on their student accounts. Other schools have made children wipe down tables and wash dishes as their payment for their meals. There is, and I've been hearing about this. I've heard some stories for months now of food getting thrown away because the kid didn't have his lunch money. It's not even like it's saved.
Wow.
It's just throw it away.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of have a mixed feeling that about, hey, if there really is a thing of an issue of the family, you know, the family can't afford to pay or whatever. I'm not sure if doing some chores for the school to help pay for their meal is such a bad idea, but I think it has to be done properly, not as a humiliation technique.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there can be value in doing that, but like you said, not to humiliate the kid. I mean, if anything, you know, maybe you're teaching, you know, if it's presented positively, maybe it should even be offered as an option up front, you know, and then you're teaching kids about capitalism and working for, you know, working for your food. It sounds strange to put it that way, but I think it can be done and presented in a way that's positive.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know. I don't know that if I'd have an objection that all kids that reach a certain age shouldn't have to do something for their education, pick up the trash on the playground and do stuff like that. I'm not sure that wouldn't be a beneficial reality check of, you know, no free lunches, so to speak. No pun intended.
Right, literally. Right.
So the last...
Yeah, I think if done right... Ahead. Oh, I was just saying, yeah, if done right, it could be a positive.
So, here's my last good news story for this show. A 7-year-old Avery Huddleston was heartbroken by the amount of damage sustained by the Caribbean territory following Hurricane Irma in September. So instead of celebrating his birthday this year and receiving gifts for himself, the first grader asked for school supplies to be donated to Puerto Rican schools. The Armorin Electric workers ended up distributing the supplies to the students of La Escuela Rafael de Jose Jesus Elementary School in Rio Grande. But while they were there, they noticed that almost all the classroom lights were still out, even though the facility had largely been without electricity since the hurricane. However, the workers noted that some of the lights in the building were still on. And upon investigating the circuitry, they were able to repair the broken transformer and restore power to the building. The students were overjoyed by the lights coming back on. The youngsters started dancing, cheering, and screaming with happiness. And, you know, and it all started with a gesture by a first grader to give up his birthday gifts to help somebody else.
Wow.
You know?
That's very cool. Yeah.
These kind of stories do need to get shared more. There's just such a, like, it's all, you know, it's all give up hope, bad stuff that we keep on getting pushed down. And I just think we all need the responsibility to share at least a good news story of some kind, that there's a difference. And you know what? A 7-year-old can make a big difference in the world by recognizing how much he has and how little somebody else doesn't have. What is friggin' wrong with our government? What are wrong with our adults in charge? I mean, I'd like them to all, like, take lessons from this 7-year-old before they decide things like the Dreamers and immigration and all of this other stuff, all of this political crap that they get caught in, instead of really doing what's best for, like, the people. I don't know. Thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to be cynical, but, you know, there is good news out there. And it's important to remind people, you know. You turn on cable news and all you're seeing is negativity, and you're reminded, well, you know, which needs to be, I mean, it needs to be reported, but it's nice to be reminded that, you know, there are, especially a young person. You said that kid was 7 years old?
7 years old.
Yeah. So he hasn't learned to be cynical yet at 7, which is good.
Yeah. Yep. And it turned out that, you know, there was something that was very, bothersome in a way, I have to say. Because they still haven't got to the bottom of the scandal of, like, millions that was spent on services that were not delivered to Puerto Rico. Is that just because, you know, the news cycle's always changing? That never really got resolved, did it?
No, you know, to be honest with you, I'd kind of forgotten about it, to tell you the truth. I hate to say it. But I know Puerto Rico, to a large extent, is still kind of a mess.
Yeah, it's still kind of a mess. And there was all sorts of questions that I never heard the answers happen to. Of what happened and what happened to all that money that was spent. And even why did somebody who did not have the infrastructure within their company or the people or anything be getting written those checks to only not be able to deliver the services? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's some pork belly something going on there. There's some stench of pigsty. I mean, there has to be.
Unfortunately, these stories aren't. There's always somebody who's figuring out how to skim some money. It's like when what was it? Hurricane Sandy. When Hurricane Sandy devastated New Jersey, you know, and the federal government, you know, remember Chris Christie and Obama embraced, and Chris Christie was so grateful about all this federal money that was going to go to help Hurricane Sandy. And a lot of that money, you know, helped the victims of Hurricane Sandy. And a lot of that money never made it to where it was supposed to go once it got to New Jersey. You know, and people in the media start asking questions, you know, where's the money? This community was supposed to get this amount of money to help them, or this family was supposed to get this amount of money to help them, and nobody's getting their money. And, you know, nobody knows anything, and nobody ever figures it out, and it's just gone. You know, but somebody ended up with it. You know?
Yeah.
It's sick.
No.
But it's not unusual.
And not unusual. Well, we're going to be wrapping this up. I know that we're going to be getting time anything now. Anything new and exciting going on in your world?
Well, you know, still doing the show, of course. Matt Connerton, Unleashed in the Afternoon, live weekdays, 4 to 6 Eastern. You can hear it online at ipmnation.com/live1. And you're going to be on. That's new and exciting on Tuesday of next week.
Okay.
Always look forward to that.
There we go.
Yeah.
The ultimate. Okay. Matt, I will see you on Tuesday. Thank you for joining us, and we'll have you back on the Dr. Kevin Show on the first Thursday of April.
Sounds great. Thank you.